Hey everyone, welcome back to the Enduring Churches podcast. Alan, I'm excited. Not only is it an amazingly beautiful day here, but we get to have this conversation and we get to have a special guest with us today. So introduce him. Let us know how we can visit.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to have one of the pastors in my association that I work with us today. This is Matthew Timmons. He's the pastor at Norwood Heights in Palestine, Texas. And it's not Palestine, Texas. It's Palestine, Texas. That's right. Something in Texas. You better get it right. but anyway, we're so glad to have him with us today. Matt is a revitalization pastor. He's been through revitalization a couple times, and he's always revitalizing himself. He is just Mr. Revitalization. So he's going to talk to us about a lot of the things to do, things not to do in revitalization. So Matt, we're glad to have you with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thank you all for having me. Been in ministry since 2000. Been a worship pastor, youth pastor, and then for the last 15, 16 years, been a lead pastor at a couple of different churches, and been married to my high school sweetheart since 2001, and we have 5 kids. Our oldest 3 are biological, they're ours, and then we've adopted 2 that are half-sisters through CPS and the foster care system, and so, and we have a dog, and so we're done. We have a full house, and I've been serving here at my current church at Norwood Heights for 10 years. Love the people here, and I love the community. I'm really, truly blessed to be able to serve the Lord.
I'm excited that you've taken some time to talk with us and that you've kind of experienced the whole gamut of ministry. But I know you were telling us beforehand that you have learned some lessons. And this hasn't been an easy road to do the revitalization thing. And so tell us a little bit about that.
And so while I was in seminary, I accepted my first pastorate, and I was there for 5 years. And a couple of years in, I'll back up. The Sunday that they called me, there were 33 people there, and it was the highest attendance they had in about 5 years. And okay. The church had gone through a number of splits for different reasons, and I honestly believe I think they hired a young pastor as a last ditch hope to save the church. Not sure that's always the wisest choice, but I had no clue what I was doing, but I thought I knew everything at that point in ministry, and so I went there and we immediately began trying to do some outreach and trying to modernize and update some things. And then we merged with another group in town that was without a pastor, without a facility. I really thought that was going well. But clearly we had not had time to bond and, through some conflict with some decisions that had to be made, and it blew up literally overnight. We had a meeting on a Tuesday, and by Sunday, almost everybody had left. And I had no idea what I was doing. We had gone from running 25 to 30 to, and there were some Sundays where we had 80 plus in church after the merger. And it was so exciting. But what I didn't realize is that what was very exciting for me was I would almost use the word traumatizing for the people that had been there for a long time, because everything they had known was gone. And I didn't appreciate that. So what I thought was great was difficult for others. Looking back, there are so many things that I would have done differently. So that was the first 5 years, there in ministry. And then God called me here to Norwood, and Norwood had come, they had had a pastor have a moral failure. Another pastor only stayed about 4 or 5 months. And then they had a long interim with the former director of missions for our association. And he had just loved the church and preached the gospel. By the time I came in, the church was desperately in need of revitalization, but they needed to relearn how to trust a pastor first. And that was not easy because that trust, that was tested repeatedly over the first probably 6 or 7 years that I was here. There was, we made some progress and we made some headway, but very incremental, and there was a lot of tension. So it just takes, it took a lot of time, and I feel like we're on the back end of some of those things now, but we still got work to do. We're not finished revitalizing.
Well, you know, Matt, one of the things that I think a lot of guys, when they go into church planting, you know, they think, okay, in 3 or 4 years, I'm going to know if I've made it or not, right? I mean, that's the church planting mentality. And I think what you're telling us is that church revitalization doesn't follow that playbook.
No, it doesn't.
It's a completely different animal.
Yeah, it depends on so many different circumstances, so many different factors weigh into the time frame that it requires. And I would argue that you can't even put a target out there for a time frame. Like I would be weary of saying, well, in 5 years or in 3 years or in 7 years. I don't think you can do that. I think that depends on relationships. I think you go into a church and you build relationships, and you'll begin to see when you've gained some trust and when you've got some, you know, some chips in your pocket, so to speak, and you float some ideas and see how they're reacted to. And you know, there are some that you lose. Like sometimes you bring up an idea and say, "Yeah, that's not going to work," and maybe they shoot it down, or maybe you realize it was just a bust, and you have to be willing to say, "Hey, guys, I'm sorry, that's on me." You know, or I'm going to respect your wishes. I think we should do something else, but you know, God put you here. Maybe it's a deacon body or an elder body or just a leadership team, and you have to be willing to trust them that, hey, they've been here a long time. They know the community, they know the people. And when they're hesitant to get going, you should slow down. You know, but over time they begin to trust a little bit more. They begin to understand what you're trying to say and where we're trying to go, and they're a lot more likely to be on board.
Talking a lot about trust both ways, right? Mm-hmm. You know, from the people trusting you as the pastor, and honestly, for you trusting them as well. And so I'm curious, you know, you've been doing this for a while now at Norwood Heights. What would you suggest to guys going into a revitalization process, or even just coming as a new pastor? What would you suggest would be things for them to do to gain trust?
I would say first and foremost, you have to be there for them. Be there, whether it's hospitals or when a tree falls down in a storm, or when their car breaks down, or when the church is something happens at the church. You know, get your hands dirty. You know, if the roof floods, you know, be the guy there, you know, cleaning up the carpets and cleaning out toilets, and just show that that you're there just to serve. I think, you know, Jesus's example as a servant leader never fails. So just serve. And then I would also say you've got to be there for them relationally. You also have to be there for them pastorally, or as a preacher, faithfully preach the word. Don't have an agenda. Don't get on soapboxes. Just preach the word constantly. You know, and then I would also say you have to stay. Mm-hmm. I think you get frustrated, you lose a battle, and you think, man, it's time to go. They don't want me here, or I've lost my ability to lead here. You know, I could have left a dozen times in 10 years. Because, right, you know, well, this battle is happening. It'd be better. It'd be easier just to leave. I mean, I've even had people tell me, you know, I think it's time for you to leave. But they weren't people who love me or who I have confided in, or they have demonstrated that they love me and they care for me, you know. Mm-hmm. And so be careful who you listen to. But I would say you got to stick with it. You've got to stay and say, I'm not going anywhere. And I think that carries a ton of weight when it comes to revitalization.
Yeah, you know, Matt, as someone who kind of had this idea of what does it really mean to be an enduring church a long time ago. I think you're onto something with that, because I think when you know and the people know that they can't outlast you, it really does help turn a corner. Yeah. And you're not doing that meanly. You're not doing that vindictively. They're just like, that's not a fight I'm going to fight, because he's younger than I am and he's going to be here longer than I am. Because most people don't have that security. You know, you hear about people going into churches and, well, you know, we were here before you got here. We'll be here after you. But if you go in with that, I'm going to be here and I'm going to stay and I'm going to put down roots, it kind of does change that equation a little bit.
Well, yeah, you have to remember that God was here before all of us, and he's the one who called me here. And mm-hmm. I had some pastors that had to remind me of that. They said, well, let me ask you, but I know that they may have voted, but before they voted, who told you to go there? I was like, well, the Lord told me to go there. It's like, well, then you don't need to leave until the Lord's the one who tells you to leave. I had a pastor back home when I was new in ministry who I loved and trusted, and I was working with our association. We were trying to develop our own church revitalization process in our association. That was back, you know, before, I guess, right after Tom Rainer maybe coined the term revitalization, you know, way at the beginning. And we talked about how long it takes for a pastor to stay at a church and how long a pastor has to stay at a church before they become the pastor. And probably the most respected pastor in our community had been at his church for 30 something years. He told a story about how it was 13 years that he was at his church before he finally became the pastor. And it was a business meeting and they had a big decision to make. And this key lay leader said, here's what I think we need to do. And for 13 years, the church followed that key leader. But then at this meeting, somebody said, well, pastor, what do you think we need to do? And then he shared his vision and the church voted to follow the pastor's leadership. And he said, that was the day I became the pastor of the church. 13 years of preaching and serving before he got to be the pastor and was trusted enough to lead.
Yeah, so many guys opt out way before that, and they never get to experience that day, right?
Right.
There was a lady at the last church that I pastored, Matt, that she came up to us and said, you know what? I had decided that I was never going to love a pastor again, because I'd get to loving on them, and then they leave. And she loved on us so well, and we were there for 13 years, and and you know, it was so great that she invested, but she was honest with us, and I think a lot of people experience that grief that they've invested their hearts in somebody, and then that person doesn't stay with them to help them to move the church forward.
Well, I know I think as a general rule of thumb, you can say as you're praying for the Lord to lead you somewhere, if that is in fact God saying go and not circumstances dictating that you leave, I think what you'll find is the people understand, especially the ones that love you most, that they'll say, you know, we're sad that you're leaving, but we understand it's time. And although we're going to miss you, we're okay. You know, and, I think that's a good barometer when if you sense that you've been at a church for a while and you're saying, hey, I feel like God may be calling me somewhere, you know, you trust in it, you confide in a couple of trustworthy people, maybe a few members, and you hear what they have to say. Because I think if they're leaders in the church, they'll tell you very quickly, it's like, you don't need to go anywhere. We're just getting started, you know, and trust that God speaks to them too. Because I've had some guys when I was thinking about leaving during some conflict, they said, well, how would the church be better off if you left right now? Man, that really hit me, because it's like, you know, I think I might be better off, and definitely the people who don't like me would be better off, or at least they think they would. But would the church, you know, and I don't see God moving me if the church is the one that's going to be harmed by it. And so middle of conflict, right? What do we say? It's when you're in the middle of conflict, that's never the time to make a decision. At least not especially not a permanent decision like staying or going.
You know, Matt, I was thinking about something you said earlier and what you're talking about here. I was having a conversation with a pastor recently, and we were talking about the benefit of actually losing on occasion in some times of conflict and learning to lose and sticking around in spite of having lost. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that a lot of pastors are suffering from is being sore losers and not knowing how to lose on some of the things that are not that big of a deal, so that when they win, they know how to win when they win on the bigger things. Yeah. And I think that that's something really a lot of pastors could stand to benefit from is losing every now and then.
Yeah, I agree. I can give you an example of worship is in a multi-generational church in a revitalization setting. Worship is a very important factor, whether you have contemporary or traditional or some sort of blended service. Well, we are a multi-generational church, and the church wants to have a blended worship service. But what does that look like, right? What is a blended worship service? How many hymns versus contemporary songs and such? Well, the deacons and I, we meet on a monthly basis, and they said, listen, we really need to insist that we have two hymns every Sunday. And I told them, I said, well, here's the thing, guys. I'll do what y'all ask me to do. I said, I do want to make sure that we're on the same page, that, you know, we don't want to neglect traditional songs and hymns and such. But at the same time, we need to recognize that we have to reach younger families if our church is going to have a future. And this, although it's not going to stop us from reaching younger families, it's definitely not going to help us reach them easier. But I said, but I will do it. And I have advocated for that ever since. And just this last Sunday, our worship guy was out. I planned the service, and I scheduled our two hymns, you know, and, you know, of course, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessings from 1758. So you can't get upset, you know, about newness of songs when you have one from the 1700s. But even right now we're dealing with, we tried out putting some tables in the back of our sanctuary for families. And we've had some pushback on that. And I told them, I said, guys, we're just trying it out. And when we have our next meeting, we're going to talk about it. And, you know, if a majority of those guys are like, hey, you know, this isn't really a great idea. We really think this is, you know, maybe this is one of those decisions we need to go back to just having the normal chairs in the sanctuary. You know, I'll say, you know what, I hear you, and we'll do it. Because to me, this isn't a hill worth dying on. We gave it a shot, you know, and if it's going to distract more people from being able to worship, then it's going to benefit, you know, then I'm willing to let it go. And so what if we don't have tables? We'll move on, you know? But being able to go into a meeting and saying, okay, guys, I understand, we'll not do that anymore. And that makes them feel like their opinion is valued, that I love them and that I care about what they think, and that they still have a part in what's going on at the church, which a no today may add up to two or three yeses later. And so I can't get hung up on, you know, any battles that I lose. I just have to say, Lord, I'm following your lead. It's not about me getting what I want. And that's I think maybe some pastors, I know I used to struggle with that as well. Am I getting what I want? And if I get distracted on this is how I think it needs to be because this is how I want it to be, we're gonna have a lot of problems. But if I can take myself out of the equation, and I can just say, Lord, what do you want? What is best for your church? What is going to help us reach the lost? And what is going to help us to thrive moving forward? Then I'm less concerned about my personal preference and whether it's my idea or not. If you don't care who gets the glory, it's really easy to have ideas and let some go and let some stay, because you're like, I don't care if I get recognized. I don't care if it's my idea. I want what's best for the church.
Man, I love what you guys are talking about. And Alan saying that we're sore losers and we need to be gracious losers and gracious winners at the other That's side right. of that too. Right. You know,
Go ahead. I was going to say, when you do have a victory, the worst thing that you can do as a pastor is take credit for it. The best thing that you can do is distribute that credit first and foremost to the Lord, but then to the team that's around you, to everybody else. It's one of the hardest things in the world is to say, man, I worked my tail off to make this happen, and then I'm not going to get any credit or recognition for it. Okay, you've got to be okay with that if you're going to be a pastor.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys sharing that. And, you know, it just reminded me, what did Jesus pray for us? Some of his last prayers on earth were that we would be unified.
That's right.
And that people would know that we belong to him because we're unified. And so if that's that right. means that I've got to let my stuff go and my ability to get pats on the back, then, hey, bring it on. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think that the narcissistic idea of being a pastor is very appealing. Like, we don't do this to stroke our own egos, or we shouldn't do it to stroke our own egos anyway. And, you know, revitalization, you know, everyone talks a lot about the role of leadership in revitalization. But Matt, I know you and I have had a lot of conversations too, that if only the leader is working through the process of revitalization, only the pastor, it's never going to work, right? It takes the entire church really coming together and recognizing that where we're going isn't good, and together we're going to have to go somewhere different.
Yeah, we had, before we really started revitalization, I went to years of revitalization trainings and seminars and, one-day retreats and such. And then when we finally got to the place as a staff, and then I went to our deacons and I said, hey, we really need to be intentional about revitalization, and it has to be a church-wide decision. We called a meeting of all of our the word you would call it is stakeholders. So we had all of our deacons and their wives. We had Bible study leaders, committee team leaders. We called them all in on a Saturday in March of 2020, and we had 50 people in the room. We had our revitalization guy from our state convention come, and he spoke to us, and everybody was on board with revitalization, and the next day, the whole world shut down. And so revitalization got just dropped that day. And then we waited a solid year to year and a half before we picked that ball back up and said, we need to get the ball rolling. I had started revitalization before that, just incrementally small changes. You get all the low hanging fruit that you can, but when you've gotten all the low hanging fruit, you can't keep picking those by yourself, because these are big decisions that impact everybody in the church. And you have to be willing to get buy-in from the leadership. And so we were able to get, after COVID, we were able to start that conversation over again. The church and I worked together, and this is when you know you start to make some inroads in leadership, when they say, well, Pastor, who do you see that needs to be on that committee? You know, and you give a list of names, and they say, we agree with you 100%. And that means the world. And that team or committee, if you want to call it that, has met every month since 2021, talking about revitalization and what that looks like in our context, bouncing ideas off of each other. Some things we've tried and have failed. Some things we say, hey, this is going well. Some things we want to keep this, but we need to make this better. We need to continue to improve. And it has been a huge blessing to see how having seven other people in a room with me from every age group and every aspect and facet of the church has helped us to be able to revitalize holistically, not just one area, but the whole church is experiencing some revitalization as we work together, trying to avoid the silos by putting everybody in a room and saying, let's talk revitalization.
Yeah, I love that. And it took a level of patience on your part to wait that year and a half. I mean, when you guys were already on board and ready to go, and then COVID happened, mm-hmm. We were in the same boat, you know, in the churches that I was pastoring, and I think everybody was. Everybody had big 2020 plans, right?
Yeah.
and then it blew up. So I appreciate, and I think your people have appreciated that you exhibited that patience, not only with the whole everything going on, but with them as well.
Well, and I think it's important to recognize that a lot of things, like when you talk about patience and winning and losing and staying around, sticking through the hard decisions and the hard times so that you can lead the church through revitalization, recognize that all of these things are very subtle. Nobody's ever going to come to you and say, you know what, now that you've stayed here long enough, I'm going to follow you. Or since you were okay with not getting what you thought we should do last month, we're going to support you on this month. Nothing is ever that clear. Right. It's always very, very subtle. And that's why we have to be in tune with the Spirit and let the Lord lead us, because we're never going to get that, writing in the sky, or, it just appeared to me one day in a dream. That's not how it's going to work for us as pastors. I think we have to pay very close attention to the small things and trust the Spirit to speak to us in those moments so that we have a sense of, yeah, we're headed in the right direction. And so you say, yes, and things are getting better. We're doing well. So it's in the little things.
Yeah, I love that. It's the little things. And revitalization oftentimes is about the little things, because, the big things we kind of see easily, but it's those little things. It's the little drifting away. We're not that far away from our mission. We're not that far off of this, or our attendance hasn't gone down that much. But when it's going down that much every year, and you wake up one day and where'd all our people go? And so I think you're right when you talk about the little things. And so, we've been talking today about how important it is for us to really kind of go into revitalization with the long-term mindset. So, Matt, in just a few sentences here, what would you say to someone now that you are coming up on 10 years being in a church that you came to with the purpose of revitalization? You're kind of like into the second phase, like another revitalization on top of a revitalization. Yeah. What would you say is like kind of the end game on this side of it?
I think at this point, you continue to revitalize. That's really is something that it never stops. It's just a constant moving forward and thinking outward. But I would say on this end of revitalization, I have to focus more on developing leaders that will pick up that mantle and take it for themselves. I recognize that I'm not going to live forever. I tell our people I have no plans of going anywhere. And yet I also recognize that I will not be here forever. So I need to prepare the church to so that when that day comes where I'm not around, that they're prepared to continue moving forward. Because the last thing that I want them to see is we've made all this progress over the years, and then let's say God calls me somewhere else, or let's say God calls me home. I don't want to see the church immediately fall back and so much of what we've done be undone because of a lack of leadership. I want the people to be willing, be ready to fill in the gaps. I need to give things away so that, when I'm gone, the only thing they need to do is find a preacher. And then that preacher can come in, that new pastor, whatever, can come in and build trust and build relationships, and the church is healthy. I don't want the next guy to have to follow up and deal with what I had to deal with. And so that's what I would say just in a few sentences. Start thinking about the end game.
I love that. And we're the worst thing, Matt, is to look back after you've left the church and then see it fall apart, crumble after you leave. That's not what you put in all that work for.
Right.
And so all of us want it to continue to move on from us. Yeah, we like that stroke on it says, oh, this guy's not as good as you. Whatever. They're great. Just let them be the pastor. But today we've been talking, Alan and I've been talking with Matt Timmons. He's the pastor at Norwood Heights, and he's been doing this revitalization thing for 10 years now and continues to grow and himself and help the church grow. And so, Matt, we sure do appreciate you taking time to visit with us today.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I've enjoyed it.
Well, there you go. So you've heard a lot today. I hope it's something that you'll take home with you. If you'd love to reach out to Matt Timmons, you can find him on any of your web searches there for him. Just look up Matt Timmons in Norwood Heights in Palestine. You can get all his contact information at the church website. I know he'd be glad to talk to any of you about church revitalization. And Trent and I are grateful for you, grateful that you take time to be a part of the Enduring Church family. That's why we do this. We want to see you and your church last for a long time. We want to see it transition someday, because you're no longer here, that you've claimed your reward, but we still want your church to be going strong. So, Matt, thanks again for being a part of this. Trent, thanks for the conversation today. And on behalf of all of us, we hope you have a great week, and then we'll catch you next week on our next episode.